She was lying on top of a tartan rug, but had taken the single pillow from beneath it to rest her head, as if needing this final comfort, even in the last moments of consciousness. By the bed stood a chair, holding an empty wine bottle, a stained tumbler, and a large screw-top jar. Beneath it, a pair of brown laced shoes had been neatly laid side by side. Perhaps, thought Mandy, she had taken them off because she hadn't wanted to soil the rug. But the rug was soiled, and so was the pillow. There was a slime of vomit like the track of a giant snail gummed to the left cheek and stiffening the pillow. The woman's eyes were half open, the irises turned upward. Her grey hair, worn in a fringe, was hardly disarranged. She was wearing a brown, high-necked jumper and a tweed skirt, from which two skinny legs, oddly twisted, stuck out like sticks. Her left arm was flung outwards, almost touching the chair. The right lay across her breast. The right hand had scrabbled at the thin wool of the jumper before death, drawing it up to reveal a few inches of white vest. Beside the empty pill bottle, there was a square envelope addressed in strong black handwriting. Mandy whispered as reverently as if she were in church, "Who is she?" Miss Etienne's voice was calm. "Sonia Clements, one of our senior editors." Was I going to work for her? Mandy knew the question was irrelevant as soon as she asked it, but Miss Etienne replied, "For part of the time, yes, but not for long. She was leaving at the end of the month." She picked up the envelope, seeming to weigh it in her hands. Mandy thought, she wants to open it, but not in front of me. After a few seconds, Miss Etienne said, "Addressed to the coroner. It's obvious enough what's happened here, even without this. I'm sorry you've had this shock, Miss Price. It was inconsiderate of her. If people wish to kill themselves, they should do so in their own homes." Mandy thought of the small terrace in Stratford East, the shared kitchen and one bathroom, her own small back room in a house in which you'd be lucky to find enough privacy to swallow the pills, let alone die of them. She made herself gaze again at the woman's face. She felt a sudden urge to close the eyes and shut the slightly gaping mouth. So this was death, or rather, this was death before the undertakers got their hands on you. Mandy had seen only one other dead person, her gran, neatly shrouded with a frill at her neck, packaged into her coffin like a doll in a gift box, curiously diminished, and looking more peaceful than gran ever had in life. The bright, restless eyes closed, the over-busy hands folded in quietude at last. Suddenly, grief came upon her in a torrent of pity, perhaps released by delayed shock or the sudden acute memory of the gran whom she had loved. At the first hot prick of tears, she wasn't sure whether they were for gran or for this stranger sprawled in such defenceless ungainliness. She seldom cried, but when she did, her tears were unstoppable. Terrified she would disgrace herself, she fought for control, and, gazing round, her eyes lit on something familiar, unfrightening, something she could cope with, an assurance that there was an ordinary world continuing outside this death cell. On the table was a small tape recorder. Mandy went over to it and closed her hand round it as if it were an icon. She said, "Is this the tape? Is it a list? Do you want it tabulated?" Miss Etienne regarded her for a moment in silence. Then she said, "Yes, tabulated. And two copies. You can use the word processor in Miss Blackett's office." And in that moment, Mandy knew that she had the job.